You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
As a Canadian, I feel, you know, we're so privileged. You know, we have such easy access to so much information, to, you know, to so much ability to really engage in activism if we choose to. And you know, and it, whether you're talking about Guatemala or so many other places around the world, that really is not the case. One of my coworkers just came back from the Philippines and told me a story of an anti-mining activist who was shopping for clothing, secondhand clothes, and was shot in the back of the head by a guy who'd been hired to assassinate him. I think he was offered, you know, several hundred dollars basically to get rid of this guy basically. You know, it really made me think, you know, next time I go shopping for secondhand clothes somewhere, that, you know, for doing the same kind of work that I'm doing here in Canada, it could be very, very different if I was working somewhere else in the world. And I really think that means we have a greater responsibility to participate, not only because of the companies that, you know, are Canadian companies that are around the world that are involved in some of the stuff that we've been talking about, but also just simply because there's a lot that needs to be done right here in Canada. And, you know, I think so many of us really take that for granted. Of course, not in this room. I see a lot of people that I know are quite involved in a number of different things, and it's great to be here to be part of a conversation with all of you about sort of what's going on and what we can be working on together. So I'm going to just touch on a few different sort of mining related issues in British Columbia and sort of the surrounding area, just to sort of maybe start a conversation. I got a question, just out of curiosity. Does anybody know what the biggest mine in BC is? What's that?
Highland Valley.
That's the range. Yeah, the Elk Valley coal field actually is about a 9 million ton coal operation annually. It's the biggest coal field in BC, and it actually services the biggest coal port in North America, which is the port in Delta, the West Shore Terminal. Which you can see when you're hopping on the ferry to go to the island, you know, those piles of coal at the at Delta Port there. That's actually the biggest coal exporting facility in North America. Exports about 20 million tons annually. So, you know, a lot of us really have no idea that this is actually going on right under our nose, and in fact is expanding rapidly. You may not know, but the price of coal has actually tripled in the last 5 years or so. And that's driving the extraction of coal at a really alarming rate all over the province. There's a number of different projects that are, you know, in the early stages of environmental assessment or even are being pushed through very quietly. There's a mine, for example, on northern Vancouver Island called the Quinsam Mine, which is a very old project. Much of the labor history of British Columbia has its roots, actually, in the coal mines of BC on Vancouver Island. You know, from Nanaimo all the way up to the northern tip of the island. And the Quinsam Mine just recently got a permit to expand its existing facility without having any real oversight or process, simply because they have a previously existing mine, so they were allowed to expand the footprint of that previously existing mine, although with drastic implications in terms of the toxins that people will be exposed to and the increased level of coal dust and the dangers for all the people that are living in and around that mine. Personally, I've gotten quite involved in a struggle to stop what's called the Raven Coal Project, which is in the Comox Valley area, close to Fanny Bay, BC. If you've ever heard of Fanny Bay oysters, this same area is about to have a large underground coal mine brought forward. And unlike the underground mines other places in the world, this is not a project that would create a lot of jobs. There isn't even really the traditional argument of jobs versus the environment here, because with these high-tech modern mines, there's these large boring machines, kind of like what was used to build the Cambie Street SkyTrain, you know, those giant digging machines that basically extract minerals from underground without a lot of human labor really necessary to even make it a reality. But, of course, the environmental consequences are still severe. In fact, in some ways, can even be worse. So this is a project that is probably one of the more top-of-mind sort of developments that we're facing right now in the Vancouver Island region anyway, simply because it's about to go to environmental assessment, so many people are getting involved in trying to build up opposition. Folks in the area are quite familiar with it, although I'd say the vast majority of people in the Lower Mainland have probably not heard of this project. It's quite small by comparison to the Elk Valley coalfield, but but it's significant and could potentially spread. BC is very rich with minerals. We've got actually some of the highest grade coal anywhere in this whole continent. We've got the stuff that's used for steel, the very carbon intensive high grade coal like the bituminous and anthracite coal. And much of it's in quite pristine areas. The Comox Valley region is relatively developed, but it does have a lot of untouched areas. And of course, like with any mine, the tailings or the waste that comes from the mine is usually either dumped in a lake system or a river somewhere, or just left in open air. And this mine is no exception. The plan is to dump the tailings in a local lake system with a bunch of trout in it. So we're holding a lot of meetings and preparing to work to try to prevent this mine from going forward. But like I said, it's only one of a number of different mines that's proposed. Another area that I think is actually quite important to draw attention to is just north of the Kootenays, just north of the existing Elk Valley mine, which is in the Peace River region. You've probably heard of the Site C Dam proposal. And often when we talk about the Site C Dam, we think about it just in the context of a large hydro project, publicly owned, unlike a lot of these sort of river privatization schemes that have become such a sort of big topic recently. And even a lot of the people who are concerned about river privatization are maybe looking at Site C slightly differently because it's publicly owned. And I concur with the sentiment that it's better for projects to be publicly owned. And just like everybody who's concerned about climate change, I want to see more projects come forward that are, green power, so as to speak. But unfortunately, the Site C Dam is part of a much bigger industrialization of that whole region, which I think, when we're looking at green energy, so-called green energy, I think we need to look not only at the footprint of the project, and the Site C Dam has quite a huge footprint in and of itself. Some of the most important agricultural land in the region is right there and would be flooded out. Of course, there's huge impacts for the First Nations people living in the area. But to take that even a step further, I think we need to look at what the energy is actually going to be used for and what all the access roads and power lines would actually open up for development. And that region has coal deposits similar in size to the Elk Valley coalfield. In fact, the last couple or three natural resource ministers have suggested that this will be the next big play, so as to speak, in terms of coal mining in British Columbia. There's huge, huge amounts of deposits. And right now there's a couple small operating mines in the Peace River region, but one of the biggest limiting factors is not enough access roads, not enough power lines. And the Site C Dam would change all that. To actually build the mine, there'd be a tremendous amount of development, in terms of staging grounds and access roads. And then, of course, there'd be the power that would be produced by the dam itself, which would potentially be used by these large mining projects. There's a band, the West Moberly, that's been doing some great work to try to stop both the Site C Dam and a number of mining projects. And they actually just recently won a court case against the BC government because of an endangered caribou herd that was not adequately protected in the process of giving a permit to this mine to go ahead. So they have been able to successfully stop one small mine, but I think we're going to see case after case after case of this in the near future. And the other big issue in that area is hydraulic fracturing for natural gas, which some of you may have heard about. You may have seen the film Gasland, which is kind of making its way around right now. But you might not know that natural gas is actually quickly becoming the number one resource extraction revenue source for the BC government. And it's got really serious consequences, largely because of the forestry industry collapsing. And also the unlike coal, it's actually the price going down that's driving the extraction of natural gas. But that natural gas, some people look at it as a bridging technology to get away from coal. Unfortunately, the reality is, I think what's really driving the demand for natural gas is the tar sands. And as we're running out of that surface level open pit mine stuff in Alberta, the majority of what's left is what you need to do steam assisted gravity drilling, or basically pumping a lot of heated water underground and cooking the oil so that you can pump it out like a traditional oil rig. So I think it's important when we're looking at these issues to sort of see the whole picture, the whole sort of interconnected relationships between these various aspects. So if you're concerned, for example, about the cancer rates in Alberta, the what is it, 30% higher rates of lymphoma and other really rare bile duct cancers and other things that the First Nations people in Fort Chippewa and elsewhere are experiencing. I think you need to also look at this picture of, well, what's the connection to the Site C dam? What's the connection to the hydraulic fracturing and the natural gas extraction in BC, which also has all kinds of consequences associated with it? And in that context, I think we also need to look at the expansion of the ports, of the highways and delta, the impact on farmland and the communities that are impacted, you know, when we actually export all this material. All of these things are interconnected. They're all part of this bigger picture of Canada's role in the world and Canada's responsibility, not only to people locally, but to the folks who are impacted by this material when it's sent somewhere else and when it's, you know, it's burned for energy or used for steel production or whatever it might be. We do very little in terms of actually adding value to our resources here in British Columbia. We basically extract stuff and send it somewhere else and forget all about it. We don't pay much attention to the toxins that, you know, actually make their way back over the Pacific from Asia, and we don't pay much attention to the impacts locally, or the, you know, the water that's poisoned in, you know, some far off steel mill in Korea or Japan or China. But I do think that we as Canadians have a responsibility to be thinking about that, because it is our industry. This is happening in our backyard, and every dollar that we spend in a store is the end result of that economy. Whether you're talking about the oil economy, which is really driving foreign policy and our trade policy here in Canada, but also coal and natural gas and you know, this whole kind of picture of development that we're seeing in British Columbia. One thing that the TRIA asked me to bring up, which I think is sort of an interesting perspective on kind of what makes this all possible in BC, and I'm usually sort of more interested personally in sort of the very location-specific stuff, not the government policy that, these kind of more esoteric policy discussions, but there is sort of an interesting a piece to this whole discussion, which is the Mineral Tenure Act, which is from 1892. And this is the act that still guides all resource extraction, basically, in the province of British Columbia. And it was based around the idea of incentivizing settlement, or to put it another way, the colonialization of British Columbia. And this act basically gives carte blanche access to an area. When a company stakes a claim somewhere, and you can basically stake a claim anywhere, some folks actually staked claims in Gordon Campbell's backyard just to prove the point. You can do it online now. It was one of the first things that the Campbell government did. They made it possible to stake a claim anywhere in the province over the internet. But if you've got a claim and it's legitimate and there's something to be extracted, you can get the right to do all kinds of things. You can get the right to build roads at the same time as you get the right to extract resources. And this isn't the case in many other parts of the of Canada. There's been updates to these kind of acts that try to incorporate things like the duty to consult First Nations, or to, you know, have more strenuous environmental assessments. Canada, by and large, is kind of open for business when it comes to resource extraction, no matter where you look. But BC is really leading the charge. We have the lowest corporate taxes anywhere in North America, believe it or not. In fact, I think we may even have the lowest corporate taxes anywhere in the world. And we've got some of the laxest environmental standards and some of the laxest, things like this Mineral Tenure Act. So there's a lot of fights going on in the province. You've probably heard about the Fish Lake fight that was a really big deal, and luckily, one of the last things our outgoing Minister of the Environment did, probably the only good thing he did as Minister of the Environment, if you want my opinion, was saying no to Fish Lake, saying no to the Seco mine that was proposed there. And there was a very good campaign that was organized by the Chilcotin people and Chief Marilyn Baptiste and others. But that fight is far from over. We could have a whole talk just on that particular struggle. It's not a campaign that I'm working on personally, but I think it's a good example of the fact that we can actually win these campaigns, that really it just takes putting some effort into organizing and getting the word out and making people aware of what the impacts are. And I do think that the majority of Canadian people really do care. I think many of us were brought up to believe that if you've got a Canadian flag on your backpack, you know, that means that you can be, you know, anybody's friend no matter where you go in the world. And unfortunately, as I'm sure the next speaker will tell you all about, that's very much not the case. And I think we have a responsibility to try to make that a little bit more real. I think we have a responsibility to make it so that, you know, the reputation that we think that we have, whether the people actually see us that way or not, is a whole other story. But But I do think that if we're going to sort of take pride in what it is to be Canadian, then we do need to take these issues seriously. And there's a lot we can do right here in British Columbia, as well as taking more responsibility for the impact of our companies elsewhere in the world.